Welcome to the Digital Marketing Masters Podcast with your host, Matt Rouse.
And welcome back to Digital Marketing Masters. My guest today is Ben Albert. How you doing, Ben?
I'm good. We should have recorded the green room conversation. You're fun, man. I'm excited to be here, Matt.
We can talk about the science of evolutionary science of egg laying. You got my chicken shirt on.
Chicken and roosters. Good to go.
So I wanted to have you on the show. I saw you speak at Traffic Conversion Summit, and also we chatted a little bit at the after events there and stuff. I really, really like your story because it's something I really believe in, which is hyper-localization, I guess I would call it, for your business. Do you want to explain a little bit about your podcast and how you got started there?
Yeah, I mean, let's just set up a scenario. And this is my story, but just imagine you're in the scenario. COVID hit. Oh, we all experienced that. Job market's changing. I personally got let go from my corporate role for a large marketing firm. And so you're unemployed. You don't really know what you're going to do next. You do have skill sets, but I had never run a business before. I had booked bands. I had set up MySpace pages back in the day. I was a music promoter. I had dabbled here and there, but I had never run a business. I had never actually made money on my own. And I came from a marketing firm. I understood podcasting, marketing, and promotion. That's about it. I wasn't the smartest guy on earth. So what am I? I'm a minnow in an ocean of sameness. There's a lot of marketers that humbly are better than me. There's a lot of firms that have been around 5, 10, 20 years. There's a lot of people that have private equity and money. I was not planning on getting let go. I had no savings to launch this big grand business. I was a minnow in an ocean of sameness. And no matter what you're doing, unless I want to figure this one out. You can make broccoli and kale taste like chocolate chip cookies with no negative and all positive. You have something that the world wants, needs, and you're going to be successful even if you're an asshole. Right. Most of us can't do that. Most of us are kind of a commodity. We're minnows in oceans of sameness. So I thought, if my hometown of Rochester, New York, isn't willing to put any chips on me, invest in me, support me, who am I? I can't go international if I can't even help my neighbor. So I started Rochester, New York. That's where I started networking. I started Rochester Business Connections podcast, very simply put, because I wanted some. On LinkedIn, a friend request was called a connection request. So I started a Rochester Business Connection podcast and went on LinkedIn and started reaching out to I went to State University, New York, Brockport. So I started reaching out to SUNY Brockport alumni for my Rochester, New York business podcast using LinkedIn to do it.
Right.
I'm still kind of a minnow, but at least I'm in a pond. I'm not in an ocean. And I was the only Rochester, New York business podcast that I at least knew of at the time. And since I was reaching to people I had a commonality with, people that went to the same college, university as me, it was very easy to at least get someone's attention. People were willing to put their chips on me, be on the show. And then a lot happened from there. I gained mentorship, I gained friends, and I gained clients. Not every person that came on my rinky-dink little podcast became a client, but we built rapport. We built a relationship. We shared info. We shared introductions. That led to goodwill. That led to clients. Clients created the foundation that gave me the confidence and the true evidence that I could be a business owner, which is something I didn't imagine I was going to do a year prior. And then once I had that evidence, I just continue to do the fundamentals well. Show up, have interviews, promote, introduction, add a ton of value, even to a tiny audience. And that's all I needed to build a business. Nowadays, it's called Real Business Connections. I do have clients that are national and a couple international. It's grown, but it started from the core, and that was my city.
Right. And so there's a couple kind of key factors there. I think one of them is you looked at the skill sets that you had and you were able to kind of capitalize on that. And another one was looking at your history and saying, is there some way I can make a connection with other people with something that I've done or someone I know, or, you know, by using your alumni as leverage, I guess you would call it, to be able to kind of gain some trust with people. Because I don't know about you, but I get 1,000 requests a week on LinkedIn from anybody trying to sell anything. The tipping point on LinkedIn is about 1,000, you know, followers or connections. Once you're over that, you're pretty much at the I'm going to get spammed constantly level.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that. I mean, Rochester, New York, still a reasonable sized population, right? I mean, it's small, but it's not small. I mean, it's not Nova Scotia small. Like, it's probably the population of all of Nova Scotia. I think the idea is there an audience big enough to support yourself, right? And kind of get your business started. And do you want to maybe talk a little bit about, like you say, you received clients, but what were they clients for? Like, what was the actual business that you started doing once you had met some business owners and stuff?
Yeah. So a couple questions, fantastic questions there. At the end of the day, if your audience is just you, your friend, your guest, their mom, and a coworker, I'm still going to deliver to all those people to the best of my ability. Small audience is not what I'm not looking at scale from day one, because if I can add value to Matt and his one listener, his 10 listeners, his 10,000 listeners, that'll scale on its own naturally. So if you're in Nova Scotia or a city, a small city, a small town, it's like, do I have an audience there? I guess, you know, that's a personal. Again, I don't like to just wave a magic wand and say, this is the way, this is the solution. How big's your region? Maybe it's not a citywide podcast. Maybe it's a regional podcast. Maybe it's a travel podcast where you travel to all the cities in the region and meet the locals. Think about what you're working with and expand on that. And maybe it's not local at all. Maybe you're into putting golf and you specifically talk to other people that are experts at putting golf. There's going to be very few experts at putting golf in Nova Scotia, but there's going to be a million of those across, you know, we got a big world out there. It surprises me. My buddy here at Duran has a vertical farming podcast and it's huge. So
I'm not surprised, honestly. There's a lot of that going on these days.
It's amazing. So we work with what we got. And, you know, we can talk about podcast monetization. I like ponetization. That's a good one.
That'd be a good name for a book.
Podetization. So we can talk about podetization all day. There's way to monetize a podcast. A lot of the ways are pretty difficult. I monetized, in my case, a service-based business. Now you could do SaaS, you could do courses, whatever you're selling is fine, but I didn't try to become a influencer overnight that can just make money through creating content. I had a service-based online marketing firm. And a lot of people would actually ask me, Matt, what do you do? I see you podcasting. What do you do? Now that some people, you got two takes on this. Bad problem to have. People have no clue what you do. You're not being clear in your messaging. I saw that as a good problem to have because all I was there to do was to add value to business owners in Rochester, New York. And then when someone said, what do you do? I can explain, you know, website, SEO, content marketing, this, that. That was way on the back end of the relationship. So the way I was monetizing was through relatively high ticket online marketing clients. And I wasn't using the podcast specifically to prospect, but the prospecting kind of happened naturally. And then once, you know, your clients are paying for your show and paying for you to get a little bit of momentum, then again, the scaling is going to happen naturally as well.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I think one of the most interesting things that I get asked with the podcast, especially, I mean, this is year 6, so we've been doing this for a while, right? Wow. I get asked all the time, like, how come you're not advertising on your podcast? How come you're not pitching on your podcast? How come you're not selling a course or something like that? And that's 100% not the reason I have the podcast. Everything you do doesn't have to have a dollar value attached to it. That value that you add can be, you know, advice or, you know, people just like listening to you. They like your personality, whatever it is. But I found really quickly with our show, the idea was kind of similar to, you know, what you were doing is we were having kind of clients and other, you know, potential clients on the show when we first started. And because we were recording, this is a good tip, by the way, if you're just starting recording your podcast, you have no idea how to do it. We were recording in a music school and the music school has no one in it Monday to Friday because all the kids are at school.
Yes.
So they would lend us their recording studio. They didn't lend it to us. We paid $30 an hour for a professional recording studio.
Beautiful.
Which is ridiculous. We would have the clients in, they would meet us, we would chit chat before and after the show, you know, that kind of thing. And then I started having more people on the show and I found really quickly that the people were kind of curious about what we were doing, but not because they want to hire us or something like that. But after the fact, they were messaging us saying, I know person X, they have this problem and you talked about how you solved that thing. You know, do you want to have a chat with them? So it was referrals from guests.
Yeah.
And that was a big moment for us because I found that out. And then I was like, well, now I can just go interview anybody I want to. And I don't have to try and pitch my audience.
I'm curious, what were you doing to make you referable? And just to kind of like think out loud here, I think a big part of it is you must have been giving a good experience for them to want to start talking about Matt. Is that a fair assumption to make?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm a lot better at it now, you know, that I've been doing it for a long time.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm not a high pressure sales kind of person. I mean, I did work in commission sales when I was younger and I was not a huge fan of it. But I find that if I can kind of gauge the community that the person is in,
yeah.
You know, like let's say they're a real estate agent, right? Brokerage owner, something involved with real estate. I know what the common problems that real estate agents have that we solve. So I will bring up a story or something about how we solved something that's related to real estate. Do you use your brokerage website or do you have your own website? And they'll be like, oh, we have our own website. And I'll be like, oh yeah, we got a website that we were doing for an agent and man, they were having problems getting their property listings and stuff up there. And so we had to use a different system, yada, yada, yada. And I explained what we did. And then the next time they have a problem getting their listings on their website or somebody else does, they go, oh yeah, Matt said he knows how to fix that.
I love right? that.
So it's not like a pitch. It's not a sales call. It's not a series of follow-up emails about business or something. It's just a little bit of storytelling.
Can I try that for fun real quick?
Sure.
So same concept. A lot of people don't realize or understand that Google owns YouTube, and YouTube's actually the second biggest search engine in the world. So everybody's wondering, how can I search engine optimize? How can I create content? Well, a great answer to that is to create a long form video that you can place on YouTube, timestamp that video so there's certain keywords for the certain sections, break that timestamp up into clips. And if you really want to get some bonus points, you write a description on that video, on that podcast, and you use that as blog content on your website. Now, what the true winners do is they're not just hosting a podcast, they're going to guest on other people's podcasts, because what they understand is that when Matt links to Ben's page from his website, he gets something called a backlink. The more people are recommending your website, the higher it ranks. So before you know it, they've got a big YouTube following. They're ranking on Google. They're a thought leader because they're creating content. And really all they're doing is having a long form conversation on a podcast. Now, Matt, I made that up on the spot.
Okay. But that's pretty close.
That's a big part of what I do for my clients with content marketing, with podcast marketing. So in theory, I could get that story down a lot better and then tell that story, and the right people that are interested in doing that will grasp onto it. And the people that aren't, that's quite all right. But the people that are, those become your clients.
Let me tell you a quick story about the story that you just had.
Yeah.
And this is one that I actually have this conversation all the time. We were talking to somebody at TNC about this fact. Yeah. Is if you can get your client to go on other podcasts, they think that they are trying to sell their story to the audience. But I would say the largest benefit, at least for most, you know, businesses that are online sales, you know, their B2B, their e-commerce, something like that. The biggest benefit is that you're going to get 50 backlinks when you go on that show, on that one show, right?
Yeah.
Because your podcast, just like my podcast, it goes to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Libsyn, you know, Spotify, and who knows how many other, right, podcast locations that goes to. And every single one of those sites is going to have a backlink to the guest, right? So you've done one, you know, 30 to 60 minute piece of work that now you get, you know, 50 backlinks to your website from it. Also, it's contextual, right? Because mm-hmm. you've got the description from the show and the transcript and all that kind of stuff. And then on top of all that, you can use that to get clips. You can cut the whole show and send it to the next person. So you could be the guest on the next show and say, look, you can watch me on the previous show. And so all those things are great, right? I mean, that's not a service that we do for clients. I'm just saying that this is something that if you're out there and you're thinking about going on shows, you just do it.
I couldn't agree more. I'm raising my hand to this, but like, who has, I haven't even said it yet, Matt, who has, who has spent 2 hours on a reel that got like 100 views, 200 That's right. views. And what's funny about a reel is those views could have been like 8 seconds long. Like they did nothing. I spent 2 hours on something that returned no result. Now I'm not saying not to do reels, but what if I spend 2 hours on podcast interviews?
Right.
Based on what you just said, that's a better return on my time investment.
And you could cut the most important bits out of that show and make reels out of it in
Except
the same
for,
2 hour period.
I'm only getting 200 views on those though, Matt.
Yeah, but if you get 200 views on them, but you use something like
Times
Get 10. Munch,
yeah.
and it cuts 20 clips out of the podcast interview and you get 200 views on each one, now you got 4,000 views and you didn't have to cut them out yourself and you didn't have to make the reel yourself.
You're entirely correct. And I was kind of just like being silly with the reels, but the next level is you have 20 of those reels. One of them pops off and you actually get 10,000. Oh, wow. That's some data proven fact that maybe I should talk about this topic more. Maybe I should tell this story more. Oh, this is the kind of thing that, so again, it's just, you know, posting it out. I'm not a huge fan of throwing crap at the wall because there's a lot of filth on my wall. That being said, you need to throw some things at the wall. And then once something sticks, you go, okay, this is the sticker.
Well, there's
Let's create
also
more
an infinite amount of walls on the internet to throw stuff at. So.
I like to find the sticker and then create more content around the sticker, but constantly be looking at the analytics because it might have sticked in January. And then in May, you're talking about something that's old news. So
right.
Yeah, man, I'm constantly throwing things at the wall. And like you
just
it's said,
getting harder and harder to tell, right?
Mm.
If something worked. The idea of actual attribution is it's at this point it's basically an educated guess and it's soon gonna be like, you know, fleeting fantasy that you could tell where anybody came from on the internet. You know, it's going that direction. Another thing that you want to think about also is there some kind of quantitative thing that you can say, like, if I do all of these efforts that I'm gonna do, is that sales? Is it leads? Is it connections? Is it, you know, conversations?
Yeah.
Or what is it you're going to measure? And maybe you're going to measure more than one of those things. But what you have to do is you have to try and do, you know, the things that you're going to do, like throw some stuff at the wall, have some, you know, tried and true theory stuff, you know, have a strategy, I think is always important. That was actually our last episode. Christine Campbell-Rappin, all about marketing strategy, have some strategy, but then be ready to consistently work on something for a long enough period of time for it actually to have some kind of benefit. And that's the problem that you have when people have their shiny object syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
They don't do it long enough to see if it works, and they've already switched to the next thing, and they never do anything long enough for it to take effect. Like, how long when you started your podcast, how long did it take before it really got rolling into something you were like, okay, this is a business and this is going to work?
Yeah, man. I mean, first off, you're nailing it. We feel like a failure sometimes because we're not seeing the long enough time horizon. And I won't go tell my entire story, but had some abuse when I was a childhood, started reading growth and personal growth books because I felt lost and lonely when I was young. Got into the music industry because there was other weird creative types in the music industry. Started a music podcast in 2016 because I wanted to add value to the industry and I wanted to get backstage and get into places for free. 2020, I'm a marketing executive. I get let go, start a marketing podcast because Music Ben, first off, was non-essential. And second off, didn't have any money and had a drinking problem. So redefined myself into business, Ben, started a marketing business podcast in my hometown of Rochester, New York, that is sales and marketing driven, but it's also personal growth driven. And my insatiable curiosity makes it super fun. And again, in 2020 and then in 2021, I magically somehow replaced my sales executive income in about a year. And they see me replacing my income in a year. They don't see that this started with the abused kid that just wanted to figure out why he was a weirdo. So in a long enough time horizon, in another 20 years, Matt, I probably won't recognize the Ben I am now. Long enough time horizon, we can do anything. And a lot of the stuff that even sucked are still preparing us and providing skills and data and understanding to be better tomorrow. So I entirely agree. And I only touched on the story, but everything that's happening is in preparation for being better at what we're doing for the future.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you did say there, you know, like it took what, year and a half to replace your income. The average podcast ends within 6 months or six episodes.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyone who stopped after six episodes, they didn't get the benefit of having done the actual podcast. When I was going to do this podcast, I committed to it. I said, I'm going to do it every week for at least 2 years. 2 years. I said, every week I'm going to do it for 2 years. You know what I did? I did it every week for 3 years. And then I did it three times a week for a year before I took a break. And you know what? Endless amounts of benefits. All the people that I have known and talked to and, you know, some of the people who are quite good friends of mine now that I still talk to all the time, I met through the podcast.
Same.
It's an amazing medium. And it's also one of the last kind of, if I can soapbox for a minute, it's kind of one of the last kind of freedom of the internet spaces.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I can say whatever I want. There's no block. There's no one telling me what I can or can't do. Facebook's not disapproving my ad or my post or putting me in Instagram jail or something, right? Podcasting is, you know, within the boundaries of the law kind of thing, is still a free space and you can do as much of it as you want. There's no limit. As long as you can afford an unlimited podcast host. Ben, I know we're kind of getting tight on time here pretty soon, but
you didn't want any insider trading tips. My girlfriend works for a publicly traded company, so I can give you some tips on air.
All right, let's have that. We'll go over the podcast I was listening today where they're testing Google Gemini on horse track racing.
Let's talk about that because I actually don't want to get sued for this podcast. There are lines we can't cross.
That's right.
Google Gemini.
You know, I heard something super funny today that's completely unrelated. It was about people using students using AI for their homework assignments.
Yeah.
And the AI detectors don't work properly, right? They can't detect most things, and or they detect people who have English as a second language. It detects them as AI generated when they write things. And so the whole system has a problem. So there's a teacher in the States, I can't remember which state, she has been putting basically ghosted text into her assignments. So it's white text on a white background, but the students copy and paste the assignment into the AI. And so the white text that they can't read is telling it to put certain words or phrases into the assignment so she can see if they had the AI write it or not.
You know what my favorite part of that is? The fact she's clever is initially what hooks me to that story. But my absolute favorite part is that they don't pay enough attention to realize that they copy pasted stuff that wasn't it. Like they're just literally, because you can see it highlighted. Once you highlight it, usually you highlight it, you can see the words. They're that lazy that they don't even realize that they're copy pasting her like hidden.
Some of that stealthing has been used in other places. Like it was in the lawsuit for Google about scraping content around music lyrics. I don't know if you ever saw that one.
No.
One of the music lyrics websites, Google said they were not scraping their content. So they went in and they changed the dots and commas, the periods and the commas in the music lyrics to spell out Morse code phrases. And then when they looked on Google, they would see the Morse code of the dots and the commas, right? The periods and the commas. So they were able to prove that Google was scraping their content, even though they said they weren't.
Wow.
Sneaky.
I like it. Right? I like it.
Ben, real business connections. Somebody wants to, they can listen to the podcast, obviously, but if they want to reach out to you, what is the best way for them to do that?
So first and foremost, I would not be here without our man, Matt. So you're already listening to this podcast. I always recommend if you haven't hit subscribe, do that now. If you haven't hit 5 stars, you can do that. That's really easy. And bonus points, brownie points goes to leaving a review. But literally just smashing subscribe and 5 stars is so, so darn easy. That's the barrier to entry because I'm humble enough to know that I wouldn't be here without Matt. You can find me where you found this. So you just type in Real Business Connections wherever you found this. And if I failed you as a marketer, Google it. And I promise Google works. So Real Business Connections, Google it. You'll find me. But show some love to Matt first. And then we're in business then.
Perfect. I appreciate it, Ben. I do have an AI-generated voice that asks people to like and subscribe that I tack on to the end. And we actually use an AI piece of music in the show. That all came from the season of AI last year. So if you want to catch up on some AI stuff, you have an article that's like part of a 2-part series.
Yeah.
Do you want to? Because I thought the article was great. Do you want to throw that out?
Yeah. And on AI, you sent me a matrix to put into ChatGPT. I did that and it's been creating better content. Do you share that with your listeners?
Yes. Let me figure out. I think I have it on my LinkedIn. So you can just find Matt Rouse on LinkedIn.
Find a way to share that with them because that's making my content better.
Yeah. I have an update for it. So I'll send you the update and I'll put it on LinkedIn so everybody can get it. Basically, it's the custom instructions for the pro version or the paid version, plus version, whatever they call it, of ChatGPT article.
The article. I haven't written the second part yet, but I wrote an article. It went semi-viral called Why AI Will Make You Look Like a Bad Marketer in 2024. Now, there's science behind even the word look. People don't want to be a bad marketer. They just don't want to look like a bad marketer. So I swear to God, if you look at dating stuff, it's not like how to be more attractive. It's how to look more attractive. People just want to look. They don't want to put in the work half the time. But I said how to not look like a – why AI will help you. Oh, my God, I can't talk, man. This is why I need AI. AI is going to make you look like a bad marketer in 2024. And it was an honest look on the fact that if you don't understand the essentials, you're going to be vanilla. You're just an operator. You don't have skill set. Digitalmarketer.com is fantastic because they teach people the skill sets. Someone's like the one you went to, Traffic and Conversions, they teach you the skill set. If you're just copy pasting stuff, you're going to be a crappy marketer. But I wrote that article and it went a little bit viral. And I want to write a second article. And it's how I created a viral article criticizing AI using AI. Because the joke of the article, very simply put, is I was on a podcast interview. We talked about how AI is making bad marketers and people don't understand the foundational essentials. I took a transcription of that podcast interview. I copy pasted the transcription into ChatGPT. I'm not fantastic with AI. I was just doing the basic stuff. Copy pasted the transcription, got the main points, got the main quotes, and then I used ChatGPT to use direct quotes, direct concepts, add a little bit of fluff, add a little bit of context, turn it into an article. And when I look back and I read that article, I actually don't think it's even that good. It was decent. It's not even that good, but it was 100% written by AI, and it started to go viral because it was criticizing AI.
There's a theory that I have for those of you who have managed to stay on after we are sounding like we are going to end it.
My bad.
This is a good theory, though. Everybody talks about how Google is against AI content, or at least AI generated content that is like below average kind of thing. I think that is 100% not the case. I think Google has tweaked their algorithm because they want people to subscribe to Gemini, or at the time Bard, right? Mm-hmm. So they want people to subscribe to their AI, and they know one of the biggest use cases is writing content for your website. So they want you to put AI content on your website because they want you to pay them to use the AI. And the other thing, and you know this as, you know, a fellow marketing person who understands a little more SEO than your average person, is that content that is fresh, it's new and fresh, it's updated, those things tend to rise to the top in the search results because there's no time decay because they're new, right? So especially if you take an old article that you already had and you put it into the AI and have it rewrite that for you and you repost it as new, that's great for SEO. So it's actually maybe benefiting you because of the scale that you can get by using AI to rewrite your old articles and stuff. You may end up with a much higher ranking by using AI for SEO than if you did not use it.
Brilliant. I don't know what to say. I presume it has to be good content, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be good. It's got to be like, it's got to fit the knowledge graph kind of thing, right? It's got to make you sound like, you know what you're talking about, and you're trustworthy and all that.
I love how you said it's got to make you sound like, you know what you, it's like, yeah. you got to look like, you got to sound like, you know what you're talking
about. Well, it's true though, right? It's true.
It is true.
It's true. Easy thing. See if you can tell something to an AI and have it believe you when it's not true. And it is the easiest thing in the world to do. And then think that the AI they're using for search is dumber than that one. Even if the AI you use now may seem magical in some ways and stupid in others, it is also the dumbest one you're ever going to use. So they're just going to get better. And they get better fast. Look at some Midjourney images from 2020 and look at them now.
Unbelievable. You
know, just actually, I think it was 2021 that Midjourney first came out. It's hard to remember now. But yeah, like the new ones are unbelievable. And look at, like, you know, the video that came out of Sona from OpenAI, right? And 11 Labs has that's the speech engine, the AI speech engine. They have a sound effect engine now.
Cool.
And so you could put a video into it and it'll automatically make the soundtrack of not the music, but it'll make all the sound effects.
I need to use that.
It's kicking. Ben, we'll talk again soon. Thanks for being on the show. I hate to cut it short, but I know you've got another show to go on. I don't want you to be late.
No, I appreciate it. I got to go start hanging out with my AI girlfriend. So she's planning on me.
You can get an AI girlfriend on Sim Theory, which is from the This Day in AI podcast. So check that out, people. I'll do a shout out to them because I love their show as well. Real Business Connections with Ben Albert. Ben, thanks for being on.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
This voiceover used to be done by a human, but now it is synthetic. Ooh la la. If you want to know if your job or business is safe from disruption, read Matt's new book, Will AI Take My Job? Predictions about AI in corporations, small business, and the workplace. Available now on Amazon. Trust me, it'll be worth it.
I hope you enjoyed Digital Marketing Masters. Check out our back catalog of episodes for more than 200 interviews with top digital marketers, authors, and productivity experts. Stay tuned for the next episode where we talk about more AI tactics and applications you can start using right now, just like me.
Remember to tap like, subscribe, and follow to never miss a show.